claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, you got to give me permission to record.
When you attend a funeral, it is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go, all suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char, and let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
Welcome to the Raw Deal today. Jim Fetzer, your host. As we enter into the Memorial Day weekend, I thought we would try something different. I have a rather famous guest, Doug Auld, who's done celebrated for his portraits and photographs, including of whistleblowers, where I'm very pleased to have been among the subjects of his portraits. So much of what we'll be talking about will be visual. You will want to catch it on the Zoom version, which will be posted on my BitChute site this evening. And we will have it up at BitChute channel Jim Fetzer. Doug, welcome to the Raw Deal.
Nice to see you, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
I'm really very, very pleased. Why don't you go right ahead and just introduce us to your latest work and take control of the screen and deal with it as you find appropriate.
Alrighty, so you want me to hit the share screen button then?
Right? Yes.
Okay, here we go. And share. Alright, so I would imagine you can see my screen, and let's pull up, first of all, my art website so everyone can see that.
Well, you and I can see it, but the audience, of course, is straight audio, so we want to be descriptive, verbal about what we're talking about.
All right, fine. Jim, do you want me to give you a little overview of how I got into all of what I do, or just go into describing the paintings?
Doug, I think that's a really good idea. Yes, give us an overview.
All right, well, it's very funny. What I do is, because I certainly didn't go to school for it, I was raised in a family. My dad was a car dealer, and I became interested in mechanics as a kid, and frogs, turtles, animals out in the field, and just, you know, nature and mechanics and how things work, and all of it dovetails together into my entire life, creative life. From auto mechanics, around 18 years old, when I was going to school to become, maybe my dad's service manager, my brother Greg took me to see the Doors play in Philadelphia, and I had a huge awakening of culture, the cultural feel of the day, the you know, in the early 70s, just great days of music and energy in the world. A lot of turbulence too. And I dovetailed my auto mechanics into piano tuning, which put me around piano, so I could tune pianos and rebuild pianos and practice the piano, and started playing the piano. We joined a band, we formed a band, we actually played the CBGBs in the city and some local clubs around New York City. But that became too much of a hassle for me, so I decided, my brother also instrumental, took me to see the Salvador Dali Museum, and I was knocked out by the art of Salvador Dali and everything, and I said, I think I could do this. I'm going to paint, and that way I can get away from the headaches of moving instruments and girlfriends having arguments with the drummer or the guitar player, and they can't make it, and I want to do my creative life by myself. So that's how I got into music and painting, and I started to just work on my own and create a whole group of art series centered around high realism in the early days, and surrealism, inspired by surrealism, social or political social kind of edge to my work. I always thought that it would be good if I used my art and my music to nudge things along, to ask questions, to pose questions to society and so on. And so that's how I came about the major series in my work.
Excellent. Tell us more about how you gravitated into whistleblowers and the like.
Okay, so the audience, when they go to this, will see it, but I'll describe it. So I'll start with my whistleblower. See, the series is called Those Who Blew the Whistle. And it's 100 portraits of whistleblowers and informers. Not only whistleblowers, because former CIA operative Robert Steele, who is included in my series, who I spoke to, I also met and spoke to him several times. He described whistleblowers as someone blowing the whistle on illicit activity. Not all my subjects are necessarily doing that, but they're informers. They're informers to disclose information that's being held back or kept down. And most of my work does not answer any questions. It really just asks more. I'm very much about the question mark. I don't have a lot of answers for much. And my feeling is, if I could paint 100 portraits of these people who have put their lives and their selves, their jobs, their families at risk for doing what they're doing, they're really a group of people that need to be looked at. They need to be acknowledged. It's not that I vet everybody. I don't vet them and say that I 100% know what this particular person, if they're telling the truth, if it's 100% story. That's not the point. Point is to paint the portrait and put the name up so that people could look and go, I don't know anything about that person. Let me look into it. So as you can see on my site right now, Jim, I have all 100 stacked one on top of the other here in one big body of work. And the first one here, JFK, comes up as number one on the left, and got Dr. Edgar Mitchell and Susan Lindauer, all the way over here, Frank Serpico. And people can go to each one of the portraits, click on it, and then click on to a bio. So if I hit the bio for Frank Serpico, we'll get a wiki page. Not that it's going to be totally honest or true, but it's a guide, and we'll get people into the ballpark. So.
Well, Doug, just a comment. I love that already. I know Susan Lindauer and do shows with her on a fairly regular basis. I've interviewed her before, and I'm a huge fan. So it's interesting to see her portrait. Go through more. Yes, tell us all 100.
Yeah, so here's the Susan Lindauer portrait, which I love. I don't love all the paintings I make. Some come out better than others. And just so you know, each painting was a day to 2 days. I did not, my other work, which I'll show everybody, which is of much higher realism, are very lengthy paintings, but these paintings, I wanted them to be more brushy, more like paint. I don't want everything to look totally like a photograph, and I think you can see that in this portrait. You can see the markings of the paint in the eyes and the brush strokes around it. And yeah, she's marvelous, and I followed her story and all these different people. I can't even remember, because I haven't really looked at the series very closely in a while, but I can't even remember every one of them. But these are people that I learned about. Once I got into taking this on, it made impressions of me on me at the time. It doesn't mean I would have chosen them today, because, you know, I'm done with 100 whistleblowers. It turns out there are thousands of whistleblowers, and as time goes by, and people that have put themselves up, put their lives on the line. Dr. David Kelly, Ken O'Keefe. You know Ken O'Keefe, Jim?
Yes. Ken O'Keefe was master of ceremonies for a program I put on at Friend's House in London in 2010 on debunking the war on terror.
Yeah. Okay, so, we have even someone that everyone will know is Jesse Ventura. Again, you know, these are people that, you know, when I listened to what they were saying and realized that they were taking a stand on something, it's not so easy. It's, you know, most people in this world will make a comment or two, but they'll recoil right away. And it's not so easy to take a stand and put your reputation on the line, which you have and so many other people have.
Let me speak about Jesse and then Rupert. Jesse and I have done a number of events together. When he was the governor of Minnesota, he came to Duluth to talk about a public-private aquarium that was faltering. He did a weekly show, an hour show. He had contacted me the day before about my first book on JFK assassination science, where I brought together a group of experts. And after the first 15 on the aquarium, he spent the rest of the time talking with me about the book and research on JFK. He would subsequently invite me onto his Jesse Ventura's America. Did a show again with Beverly Alver and Aubrey Reich, who was the ambulance driver that transported the body to Air Force One from Parkland, where Beverly watched Jack's brains blown out in Dealey Plaza. Aubrey felt the defect in the back of the head when he helped to put the body into the bronze ceremonial casket, and I explained how we discovered they'd altered the x-ray to patch the blood at the back of the head. He would fly me back to Harvard, to Boston, when he was a visiting professor there, to give what may have been the only conspiracy lecture on the assassination of JFK ever delivered at Harvard University. And later, when he was doing his conspiracy theory show, he flew me out to Ventura County, after which he chose his own name, by the way, to assist in setting up a reenactment of the official account, demonstrating how preposterous it is, because Jesse is a much better shot than was Lee Oswald, had a far superior weapon, Mandic or Carcano, than Lee was alleged to have used, which was so rusty and decrepit that experts refused to even test fire it until it had been rebuilt. And where we established, I ensured the angles, the distances, and so forth were correct in relation to bales of hay that represented the motorcade and the different distances and angles for the three purported shots. And on three repetitions, Jesse could only make one hit, and the times were all wrong. I was timing. So I'm a huge fan of Jesse here, and recently actually featured him on this very show.
Oh, great. Jim, just to let you know, you're coming through barely audible. I can hear you, but I can barely understand you. It's so scratchy and distorted.
I know. There's something wrong with the audio today, Doug. I'm really distressed about it. Mitchell and I, my producer, have been going back and forth about it. Can you hear me any better now?
No, I can't. I mean, I can make out what you're saying, but it's really a strain. Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah, everybody can hear you clearly, I'm glad to say.
All right, well, I guess it is what it is. Unless we can straighten it out, we'll just move along. You know, I just want to let everybody know, you know, I'm an average everyday person that uses my intuition and common sense, I think, which is seems to be in short supply in our present situation. And I think going back to JFK, I mean, I was 10 years old when JFK was shot. And growing up in a Catholic family, Catholic school and everything, I mean, I never chose to be, you know, people think I'm a conspiracy theorist as if I chose it as a hobby or a profession. It's like, I have no interest in just thinking in terms of conspiracy. It's not like my interest or my calling. It's that when things don't add up and when things don't feel right, when something doesn't make sense, and it doesn't pass the stomach test for me, I start looking at it, I go, nah, it doesn't work. And of course, JFK was one of the major things there. 9/11 also. You, of course, extensively went into shootings, the school shootings. So much heat from friends about, are you kidding me? How could you think that this is... And I know, I'm like, I know it's very sensitive, and I know that it's hard to say, but it doesn't make sense. When I look at the body of evidence and the different people, you know, that's, you know, I just want people to know, it's not like my calling to be like, oh, well, conspiratorial about everything, but if things don't work, they don't work.
Hey everybody, this is Mitch. I was trying to get Jim's audio straightened out here. He seems to be get caught in a loop. He's on Zoom recording this. Let me pull Jim back in here, and hopefully we'll be out of his loop, or the loop, whichever it was. Then let me reconnect with Jim. Hello, Jim.
Of course, you somebody you know, right?
Hey, Jim, you have a loop on your end on Zoom.
You're gonna have to drop your Zoom call.
I hate to remove Jim from the call, but it's just somebody I know, right? We get the hell of a loop. I tried to get Jim. Let me try a different way here. Let me call Jim on his
Of course, he's somebody you know, right?
Now, hang on. I'm gonna try to connect Jim through his other phone. So, Jim, come on, Jim. Oh, I better make the call. Oh my God. Hey, hello? Come on, Jim, pick up. This is his cell phone. I don't know if he'll pick up. Come on, Jim, pick up. Jim.
Metro. Yeah.
Jim, you're looping on your Zoom call. We're getting a loop from that every time I call you on your Skype. I don't know if you can hear it on your end or not.
with Doug on the radio?
Yeah. I mean, I had to drop it. I had to drop your Skype call because it's going.
I'll get the phone.
It's in a loop. That's why I called you on your cell phone.
Yeah, I'll get.
Okay. Sure. All right, we'll get right back to the call then.
This one.
All right. Okay, everybody. Yeah, I'm on the air talking with Jim. I hope I wasn't cussing. I'm sorry if I was, Jim. God, forgive me. Oh my God, I'm a terrible producer. Anyway, so let's see. We'll try to get. I can't hear that. Hopefully we can get Jim and Alan back on here. Oops. Here I am. I'm falling. I'm clicking through different screens and I'm not clicking the right button. Hopefully we can get Jim and Alan back and we won't have that loop that we were having. Trying to call Jim right now, but yeah, Alan is so right, man. I'll tell you, we are, it'll come a day when we will probably see, people disappear here in the U.S. I mean, they're doing it in China. They're getting away with it. The U.N. doesn't really care. Hey, Jim, where are you, Jim? Anyway, Jim is not available. Okay.
Of course you somebody you know, right?
Okay, let's call Jim's cell phone, okay? I'm sorry about this, everybody. Live productions sometimes go like this. I don't know why Jim's got caught up in a feedback.
This is Jim Fetzer. Please leave a message, and I'll get back at my earliest opportunity. Thank you.
Hey,
the
Jim,
mailbox is full and cannot accept
still...
any messages at this time. Goodbye.
Oh, well, okay. All right. There's that settles that, doesn't it? Looks like I'm even getting the poor connection now. That's probably my side. Anyway, so God forbid, Jim, where are you? Yo, Jim. He's going to have to hang, whatever Jim's going to do, he's going to have to hang up his current Zoom call, completely reset it. And then reset his audio. I'll try to call him again, but all I'm getting is a feedback loop from Jim's computer from his Zoom call with Alan. We'll try again.
Of course you somebody you know, right?
Still got the feedback loop. I don't know if you can hear me. Jim, feedback loop is still going on. You have to reset your call.
Of course he's somebody you know, right?
right? Of course he's somebody you know, 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 right?
Here I am. I'm muted. I'm sorry,
hello,
everybody. Hey, Alan.
No, you got the wrong number, bud.
Okay. Gosh.
Okay.
Sorry. I was trying to. Is Alan 201-563-0445? Okay. Well, let me call Jim. Maybe he can. That's the number Jim had me call. 201-563-0455. Nope, I don't know. I guess I should shut my mouth, huh? There's a break. There's a break.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer with 100% apologies for all of this. We're trying to get my special guest, Doug Ault, back, but he, I'm afraid, misunderstands that Mitchell is trying to ring him to bring him in and thinks we're still doing the video show, which, of course, we cannot do. It's a very distressing situation. I have my own theories about what's going on here in terms of the interference with my audio, which is not a normal occurrence. But, you know, whether... Have we got him? Doug.
Hello?
Yes, Doug, can you hear me okay?
No, I want you to stop calling this number, too. I'm not Alan and I'm not Doug.
Okay. Sorry. Mitchell, this is a bit of a catastrophe.
Well, are you sure that's the right number?
No, I'm calling him now to find, because the guy you called, did you call the 0445 number? Yeah, I'm sure you did. The number he sent me.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, Mitchell, give me his number, your number again. It's 540-352-4452. 350-4452, yes, of course. See if we can get Doug on. Meanwhile, what's going on in your world, Mitchell? It looks like... politics as usual, with many, many problems out there confronting the nation, sad to say.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, the flip-flop on the Wuhan flu, the COVID catastrophe as being an origin from a lab, of course, that was a major conspiracy theory that everybody, the MSM, the main scripted news, as I call them, or the main scripted media, because they're all running a script and it's all parallel. So you really never get truth and you never get investigations and real investigative journalism. You just get other crap.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Hang on.
He has reset, but I've sent him our number. Do we have him now?
Jim?
Doug. Wow, I can't begin to apologize for all this. I think I know it's got to do with my Sandy Hook lawsuit, which is making its way to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and certain parties are unhappy about it, and they've undertaken sabotage operation in the past. This is just one I didn't anticipate. So I'm very sorry about that. What I propose is we simply continue with the audio, but you and I will do the video. We'll pick it up where we left off and complete it, and I'll have the video posted. So, Doug, will that be workable with you?
Do you mean just over the phone?
Right, yeah, for right now. But then you and I will redo it with a video. In other words... we'll just do straight audio for now, but I will we'll do the video to make up for it.
Oh, okay. So we can talk. In other words, since we have the time slot set, we can talk
here on in. All right, well, that's fine. I'll talk. I mean, I'll try to. Yeah, that was the weirdest thing. I've never had that happen before. I heard my voice saying the same line over and over and over again. It wouldn't stop.
Well, I'll tell you, we called the number you sent us. We called it a couple times, and we got an answer, and the guy said it wasn't his number, and, of course, he wasn't you. And he wasn't Mitchell, who's my producer, and he wasn't Doug. So, I mean, here we are.
That was my number. That was my real number. I sent it three or four times.
Well, as I started to explain, Rupert Murdoch actually published from the Wilderness Newsletter a piece I did with John P. Costella. The NTSB failed Wellstone, which everyone can find online, is still up there, where we were tramping around in the snow in 35 below zero weather near Eveleth, Virginia Airport, where the plane crash took place, picking up parts of the charred wreckage, which I would subsequently have analyzed. And we discovered, you know, how the NTSB really had covered up the basic data. I'm very glad you featured him. And of course, Kevin Barrett and I go back a long way. I mentioned how Ken O'Keefe had shared been my master of ceremonies at Friend's House in London. Well, Kevin Barrett was one of the speakers. He and Juliet Ottsman, the world famous saxophone player, who's also a political activist, were the speakers. So it was really quite a wonderful occasion. We went out of our way to visit mosques to encourage Muslims to visit, because we were explaining, that 9/11 and Islam were not connected, that this basically was an Israeli op, that it was a stunt contrived to draw American forces into the Middle East to take out the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region. But for reasons I'm not prepared to explain, though I understand London is the most surveilled city in the world, they did not turn out. They were, and in fact, a colleague, I think it was even Nick Kohlerstrom, had suggested to me that they would not turn out, that they would find this too intimidating to even attend.
Sure.
Kevin and I even had a show together for a year and a half called The Dynamic Duo on Genesis GCN. And, we're regular contact. He recently interviewed me, actually Ron Avery, about the Sandy Hook lawsuit, because Ron Avery did a brilliant critique of what happened at the circuit court and the appellate court, where the circuit court wouldn't allow me to present a defense to explain the massive evidence I had that Sandy Hook had been, in fact, a FEMA exercise presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Well, we even have the manual where the FBI, in its consolidated crime statistic for 2012, declared that there were zero deaths in Newtown in 2012, where Sandy Hook is a subdivision. So if there were zero deaths in Newtown, there were zero deaths in Sandy Hook. We even had included in the book, again, which the judge wouldn't let me present, Paul Preston, who's a former school administrator, who had supervised active shooter drills so disturbed by what he saw broadcast from Newtown that day that he reached out to his contacts in the Obama Department of Education, all of whom confirmed to him it had been a drill, no children had been harmed, and it was done to promote gun control. I wasn't allowed to present any of that evidence, David, for all the obvious reasons. And then the appellate court, just declared as though it were a fact that Adam Lanza had killed 20 children and 6 adults at Sandy Hook. I mean, it was just ridiculous. So we have a petition to the Supreme Court of Wisconsin, and initially it was very odd. There was a strange game played as though it had not been submitted in a timely fashion. When the decision was handed down on the 7th of April, we had 30 days to submit. We submitted on the 7th of May. There are only 30 days in April. So the Supreme Court, in response to a petition to reestablish, actually reversed itself and is now accepting our petition, it appears. though it hasn't formally shown up on the docket. The bottom line, Doug, I mean, there are a lot of people very unhappy that the case is moving forward and they're seeking to do everything sure. they can to stop it.
Well, I would imagine. Yeah.
Yeah, so Kevin and I, you know, Kevin interviewed Ron Avery, did a wonderful job. He interviewed me recently, too. He wrote a brilliant piece about the trial for damages. My case was settled by the court using a summary judgment, which was inappropriate because the central facts of the matter were in dispute, which meant it had to go to a jury trial. Nevertheless, resolving in favor of the plaintiff. And during the trial for damages, Kevin was present. He published a brilliant piece about it on Oon's Review entitled The Legal Lynching of a Truth Seeker, Jim Fetzer's Stalinist-Style Show Trial, which I think is by far the best ever written about the case. And then Ron Avery has this brilliant piece about the way in which my appeals have been handled, which you can find on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. So we're making progress, Doug, but my God, is it a titanic yeah. undertaking. I mean, they're throwing everything but the kitchen sink at me. And honestly, I believe the interference today with the show is an indirect aspect of it for reasons I won't elaborate, but there it is. You've done so much wonderful work, and it's so visual. We will do a visual version of the show and get it up so everyone can see. Just go ahead and proceed by talking about you are going through the 100 whistleblowers, and you got some spectacular individuals on your list. I'm very impressed.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to mention a few others that were related to the topic we're talking about. I have painted here Dr. James Tracy.
Oh, wonderful. And of course, James did a, on his own blog, this was on his own time, even though he, as a faculty member at Florida Atlantic, had courses. He was in the School of Communications and so forth. He had a course on the media and conspiracy. So this would have fallen directly within his formal areas of specialization as a professor. He published a brilliant piece on the Wayne Carver press conference, which was so bizarre in so many ways. And paid for it heavily. Lenny Posner, the same guy who ran lawsuit against me, ran a vendetta against James Tracy, and the university was even moved to dismiss him on the ground he hadn't signed a form. I'll tell you, on 35 years of higher education, Doug, I've never seen anyone dismissed for failing to sign a form. It was just ridiculous. Yeah. There's a tenured professor, probably the best faculty member they had.
Yeah.
Wayne Carver was also deposed in my suit, and I raised questions with him and showed him a copy of one of the death certificates in dispute. And he just reacted like it was a cross and he was a vampire. He didn't want to have anything to do with it. He said he had no idea what that was. Rather fascinating aside. Yeah. He's now departed this earth, or so we are told.
Another person I related to all this that I have a portrait of is Wolfgang Halbig.
Yes, yes. Wolfgang and I traveled to Newtown together in 2014. We visited where the school had been. It had all been reduced to dirt clods at that point in time. Yeah. The school, based upon the research I reported, where I brought together 13 experts, including six of us, PhDs, which, of course, is significant because it's a research credential. I mean, it's a certification of your qualification and competence in conducting research. The school had been closed by 2008. It was loaded with asbestos and other biohazards, damaged by a hurricane. It had been abandoned by 2008, so there were no students there. They knew long before the school was uninhabitable, and we got confirmation along the way, even after I, you know, did my initial work publishing the book about a contractor who visited the school to describe the deplorable condition. When Wolfgang and I visited, it had been reduced to dirt clods. And, of course, those who were involved in the demolition were required to sign lifetime gag orders about not being able to speak about what they saw in the school, which would have included no blood on the floor, no pockmarks in the walls from bullets being fired. Lifetime gag orders. they would receive a $50 million grant to build a new school. And this is just a kindergarten through fourth grade school, Doug. I mean, I did a survey in a cross country. It only cost $7 million on the average to have a kindergarten through fourth grade. So what was this, the Taj Mahal of elementary schools?
Well, it sounds like it could have just been across the board payola situation. It's all, it's never, I follow most of what you just talked about with Wolfgang and Tracy and everyone. I followed everything you did. I followed everything everybody did. And I just, you know, and I live in the town Hoboken, New Jersey, where oddly enough, the very start of this entire story started here. That's where it began. And with the brothers, okay, the Lances, my memory is so bad because I haven't reviewed this topic in a long time, but it started here and went from there, if I'm not mistaken. Can you speak of that, or was it was that possibly the Boston bombing? I'm trying to.
No. There wasn't. Yeah, I think there was a New Jersey connection there, though it's a little obscure. I think his alleged brother Adam was supposed to have
yes.
a brother who was residing in New Jersey. Many think yes, it was a brother yes. who was being used as a basis for Adam. Adam doesn't appear to be an authentic individual, but rather, you know, a portrait. It looks to me like they took a skull and did a kind of a watercolor to convey kind of a weird or deathly image. I mean, this whole thing is a complete fantasy. It's unbelievable how they are pulling out all the stops to keep anyone from revealing what happened, just as Wolfgang was himself hit all kinds of ways. This is a wonderful guy, a former Florida State Trooper, former U.S. Customs agent, very responsible positions, former school principal, nationally recognized school safety expert. You know, Doug, the irony, Wolfgang only got into it and began making inquiries about what had happened because he wanted to explain to other school systems what steps they should take to avoid it happening to them. Wow.
I know. I remember that, and I watched a lot of his videos, and the poor man was so beleaguered. He had a good heart and well intending. And it's almost like he was like beside himself saying, look, if I'm crazy or if I'm wrong, I'll commit myself. Do you remember?
I know. Unbelievable. I know you're
but
right.
But you know what he had to say rang true. I'm sorry, because I watched it all and none of it added up again. But most people, you know, when you look at this and you have an official story, most people are just so intimidated by an official story, anything official, that in any walk of life, or one of the series of works that I do, jumping on something else for a second, is I did a whole series of work on religion and uniform, nuns and priests and people in uniform. You know the power of a pharmaceutical coat, a white coat, when somebody's on TV and tells you you need this drug, and people say, I guess they know what they're talking about. They're in a white coat with a stethoscope around their neck. They must know what they're talking about, and it makes a very big impression. So I did these paintings of nuns and priests in very odd circumstances, where even though they were in their nun and priest uniform, they were doing or up to things that don't have to do that take them out of that context. And I was trying to make a comment on the fact that we are underneath our uniform, we're just people. But when, you know, you walk into a diner and you stand next to a guy and he's ordering a cup of coffee, that's one thing. You stand next to a guy in a cop's outfit or a priest's outfit and you're already acting different. You're already feeling different. You're not quite sure what you can say or not say, or can you be yourself? And a lot of my art has made comment on all these things.
Yeah, that's excellent, Doug. You know, these are people who aren't doctors, but play doctors on TV. You know, after Orlando, they put out, tried to encourage people to come back after the Stage Pulse club shooting, where the permit for the club had expired 3 years before. This is when they repainted the club with white to black, where there wasn't any, but it was an abandoned club, just as they used an abandoned school in Newtown. I mean, it's just outrageous. they would eventually, the emergency medical facility in Orlando declared they weren't going to charge for any services rendered. And of course, the explanation, I think, is pretty obvious, Doug, is they didn't render any services, so they didn't want to be prosecuted for fraud. They put out two videos. One was police officers and police women dancing and singing about coming to Orlando, and another was doctors and nurses dancing and singing about coming to Orlando. All actors, all fake, but I mean, the American people don't realize how often they're being played. Harrison Hanks, a fellow named Harrison Hanks, has a wonderful video about crisis actors. He says, are you suffering from subpar crisis acting? You know, consult me, Harrison Hanks. And he goes through and shows all the different roles, and he intersperses it with actual footage of fake crisis actors on the scene in Orlando and Charlottesville and other places. I mean, it's a brilliant piece. Everyone out there in our audience ought to track it down, Harrison Hanks on the ultimate crisis actor.
I saw a lot of that stuff. And also, who was the woman who did a video? I think it was Let's Talk About Sandy Hook, I think her name. Do you remember her name? She did a whole long video.
Well, you may or may not be thinking of Sophia Smalstrom, who did Sandy Hook and 2, 3, 4, and 5 Dimensions. Absolutely brilliant piece about it. She was one of the first. There are two others. There's one about, we need to talk about Sandy Hook. And
Yes. Well, I remember when she showed the dash cam of the cops having fun eating pizza on the hood of their cars and things like that. And they were like, while bodies were in the school, allegedly.
Right. I know, it was absurd. When you speak of dash cam footage, too, here's another good one. There were, according to the official account by Steven Sadinsky on Sandy Hook, there were 489 kids present there. I mean, this is just absurd. You subtract 20, you got 469 who needed to be evacuated. But there were no buses, no cars, no nothing to evacuate. In fact, the one access route in and out on Dickinson Drive was so clogged you could have got an emergency vehicle or a bus in or out of there if you wanted to. In the police report, it claimed that the evacuation was taking place at specific times and places in the parking lot. And we have dash cam footage from those times and places. And guess what, Doug? Nothing is going on.
Yeah.
We're told you can't prove a negative, but you can prove there's no elephant in your living room by going there and looking for signs of the presence of elephant, discerning none. You're entitled to infer that's because there's no elephant there. If you go to the footage and find where you're told that there was an evacuation taking place and find no signs of an evacuation taking place, you're entitled to infer that's because no evacuation was taking place. The way they play the public is outrageous. Go, yeah.
You know, Jim, I had a conversation with a friend. We went out to dinner once, and he was pretty much on the opposite end of the spectrum of this. Now, I know he never looked at all the information, but, you know, just add this up. Him and his wife were having a child and a whole bunch of stuff, and they got so involved in what happened in the official story that they believed the official story, that I had a very, very, very serious argument with this guy. I almost came to blows. He was like, I don't know what you're talking about, Doug. He goes, I met with my wife. We met with the families of that lost these children. We met with them in this, with the Sandy Hook promise or something like that. And we met with them, and this is real. This is highly irresponsible of you to be like doing any, it really, really came at me. And I thought, how do you answer that, Jim? How do you answer people that come up with this idea that they met with the families?
Well, it's all nonsense. There weren't any students there. I mean, they were participating in an elaborate fraud in my lawsuit against Lenny Posner. I counterclaims with the judge set aside and then dismissed, including fraud and theft by deception. Would you know, these parents who claimed to have lost children received from a sympathetic but gullible American public between $27 and $130 million in donations. If you divide that by the 26 families, that's between $1 and $5 million bucks a piece for pretending to have lost a child at Sandy Hook. They're doing a pretty good job of acting on that basis. But I can assure you, you know, the Posner lawsuit against me was to try to find a way to stem the downloading of the book, which Amazon had banned. And in fact, Amazon had banned, in which I had released immediately for free to the public as a PDF. You know, I never cared about making any money on this. I just want to get the truth out. Where a friend of mine who follows these matters tells me the book has been downloaded over 10 million times. Well, they're trying to staunch the flood, you know, to find something. So they picked out really a one claim made three times in the book to sue me over, and then by virtue of getting a defamation judgment, went after everyone who was releasing the book for free to tell them they were committing a defamation, giving the judgment in my case. Doug, we're about to hit a break. I'm so pleased we're connected. We will do the video version. We'll continue our conversation on the other side of this break. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting "This is a drill, this is a drill" on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11, available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I'm so pleased to have Doug Ault here today as my special featured guest on the occasion of the Memorial Weekend. I thought we'd try something different because of the rocky start with the audio and all that, where the Zoom didn't work. Doug and I are going to do a video version that will be subsequently uploaded at my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer. Meanwhile, I am going to invite callers, but because we haven't covered a fraction of what Doug would like, I'm going to wait until after the break here at the bottom of the hour, but you will be welcome to call in. Remember, of course, the number 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452 to speak to Doug and me. Doug, pick up wherever you like.
All right, Jim, I thought maybe it would be good to give the audience my art website.
Yes, so that's absolutely.
Okay, and it basically is just my name. It's www.dougauld.com. That's DougAuld.com. And you can see the whole series of whistleblowers, my religion in uniform paintings, my photorealism, my surrealism, my early works, and so on. So there's a whole series of work there that everyone can check out. You know, just touching on Sandy Hook again, I remember when Wolfgang went there, and he went in to talk to, was it the governor?
No. Go ahead.
He went in and asked, in front of camera, he's, remember when they said, we were talked to that something like this was going to happen at our school. Was it the governor who said
yes.
That?
And it was
recorded. I remember watching it. It was recorded. And when Wolfgang asked him, he said, why did you say you were spoken to? Who spoke to you? Who said that this was going to happen? And he denied it, flat out denied it on camera.
Doug, yeah. It wasn't during the visit to Newtown, of course. That was a separate occasion where he went to the visitor's office because I was with him there in Newtown. We visited the, what was it, the Southwest, where they were receiving the donations. The books were supposed to be open to the public, but they wouldn't even allow Wolfgang into the building. They brought over 6 or 7 Newtown cops to physically block his access. So it was something like Southwest Connecticut United Way, where the books are by law supposed to be open and available to the public. They wouldn't let him take a look. We went to the Newtown Police Department because the 3 highest officers had been involved, but none of them were willing to come out and speak with us. Then subsequently, after we had lunch, we went up to where the school had been, as I described, nothing but dirt clods. On the way, we stopped there at the firehouse right on the corner. The fire chief wasn't there, so we went up, looked at where the school had been, and when we came back, we tried again, and Wolfgang got a very hostile reception. One of the firemen was actually pushed him physically. We got it all on camera. I mean, it was quite shocking. You would think you know, that individuals like the police and the United Way and the firemen would be very glad to have people coming to follow up on what happened. But in fact, if it were real, you see, you get a very different response if it's fake. And all the responses we got everywhere indicated this was not a real event, that this was an illusion with very high political stakes. But you're 100%, you're 100% correct that the governor, during the press conference, he said that he and the lieutenant governor had been spoken to that something like this might happen, leading me to speculate something like this. What could he have possibly meant? If he'd been warned, you know, of a demented shooter coming in and shooting up a bunch of kids in a public school in Connecticut, then obviously he had the obligation to notify the school system to elevate their security to ensure it didn't happen. But the governor did not do that. The alternative being he'd been informed that they were going to take an abandoned school, conduct a drill, and present it as a mass murder to promote gun control. And, of course, that's exactly what happened. And when I looked into by whom, it turned out that none other than Eric Holder, who was an anti-gun fanatic, had met with the governor on the 27th of November to share with him the Obama gun control agenda. And I'm sure that's when he was spoken to by none other than Eric Holder that something like this would happen indeed. So you're right. I mean, Wolfgang very appropriately went to the governor's office and he asked him, and the governor flat out denied having even said it, which is just absurd on its face. Since this was a nationally, even internationally televised event when he made the original remark. So you're spot on.
Yeah. And, you know, why I chose these people and why I was compelled to dedicate my time to paint 100 portraits, a very lengthy series of work, and certainly not done for commerce reasons. I mean, I consider this series of work one body of work. And with all the publicity that my work has had in various manners and ways, no galleries ever come near me. Like, you know, this is not like a great career move. I could be painting pretty gals and flowers and be making a lot more money than what I've done choosing my series of work. I always just looked at, like, Wolfgang is a perfect example. I followed him from the start, and I said, there is absolutely no motive, no upside, no payday for Wolfgang Halbig to be involving himself in this. This man is in the time of his life to enjoy his wife and his family and play golf and whatever, and he mired himself in this because he simply couldn't believe how nothing adds up. He couldn't believe it. And obviously, Jim, you too, and many other great people who've said, I just can't sit back and watch this. And so my activism is, albeit a soft activism, it's the fact that making these paintings, not photographs, but paintings, if all 100 were in a room, and you could, you know, because people deal with art and paintings in a different way than they deal with photographs, I feel. Painting has a human hand in it, and there's a human being that has created this portrait, and interpretation and energy and vibration, almost, I want to say, goes into each work of art. And I think they're more profound when you sit and when you take a walk around a gallery with real paintings versus photographs, where we're inundated with photography. And this is not to sit, not to minimize photographers and their work, but I wanted it to be paintings, and my goal is to have this series of work up, whether it's institutions or colleges, college forums, or a museum or whatever. And it's just you know, it's just not happened. But people that know about this series of work say, Doug, sit on it. Don't, like, I never wanted to sell any of them individually. I've been asked to sell the individual portraits. I don't want to do that. I want the whole 100 portraits to mark a series of work, you know, that's aim was to make an impact on people about the fact that these are just human beings who decided to take a look at this and wouldn't stop asking questions. And I'm indebted to them.
Yeah, well, you've done a spectacular job of it. Would you like to continue to review some of the others you've included in your set of 100 whistleblowers?
Sure. I'll tell you, a woman who reached out to me is Kay Griggs. Do you know Kay Griggs?
Kay Griggs, yes. She was involved in all the sex abuse, child exploitation, pedophilia, Pizzagate sort of thing, as I recall.
Yeah, she was she was the former Marine colonel's wife. Talked about, and when he drank, he had a pretty loose lips, so to speak, and he talked to her and spilled the beans on drug running and illegal weapons deals and, deep perversions and all sorts of stuff. And Kay, you know, I painted her a rather frank, hard portrait of her. My paintings were never meant to be cosmetically flattering. They were meant to be factual and strong. And she called me and she thanked me. She said, "Doug, your work is marvelous. Thank you so much for doing what you're doing." And I turned the tables. I said, "No, the gratitude is towards you and others like you that I've painted that have been willing to come forward with their stories." So Kay is one of them on my site. What about the Ronald Bernard, I think from the Netherlands, who also kind of was the financial guy? This was riveting when I read and heard about him, where he was being brought into the upper echelons of the so-called Illuminati and was going to be able to partake in the, the underage sex stuff that was going on. And he separated himself and got out of it and told the story. And it's, I don't think a lot, it's almost like Eyes Wide Shut, the movie Eyes Wide Shut, sort of like that whole thing where, you're in and you get in there, you can't get out because then there's the honey trap and you're compromised and everything. And he was one of the ones that was really brave in my mind to blow the whistle on that entire side of things. So, he's another one. Of course, I have you. I have your portrait here. I have, let's see, who else that I can put? Jim Mars. Do you know Jim Mars?
Yes. Jim is a wonderful guy. Of course, his book Crossfire was one of the two primary sources for Oliver Stone's magisterial film, JFK, which would have won the Best Picture of the Year, except for Jack Vellante, who had one time been an aide to JFK, was then the czar of Hollywood sabotaging it. I mean, it's a masterpiece. While it's not correct in every respect, I find three major flaws, which were really because he was being advised by Robert Roden, who, in my opinion, has been seeking to mislead the JFK community about crucial issues for quite a long time. Oliver did not know that the Zapruder film had been massively edited because Roden was assuring him it was authentic. But more is missing from the film than we have available in the 487 frames. He did not know that Lee Oswald was standing in the doorway of the book depository when the motorcade passed by, therefore it cannot not only have been the lone demented gunman, but cannot have been one of the shooters. And in the third place, he has three hit teams. We've actually established there were eight different assassins in Dealey Plaza. I've identified six by name, rank, and serial number. Ole Domegaard, the seventh, with which I agree. And there's an eighth who was on the south knoll, the opposite the grassy knoll, where there was a single tree. You wouldn't think there'd be anywhere for an assassin to hide. But I've seen two photographs of him standing with a rifle by two different students of JFK. And he clearly was there. He's the only unidentified. Doug, it turns out that the different groups and sponsors, like the CIA, the Joint Chiefs, the Mafia, the anti-Castro Cubans, the Dallas Police Department, and so forth, put up their own individual shooter. We even have an Air Force expert. I mean, it's really fascinating when you sort it out and discover the sponsors, that each of the sponsors had their own individual hitman right there in Dealey Plaza, including Lyndon Johnson, who was, the coordinator of the entire effort. Had his own personal hitman, Malcolm Matt Wallace, firing from the book depository, but not at JFK, at John Connolly in the mistaken belief
that was Ralph Yarborough, a liberal Texas senator that Linda despised. I mean, it's just fascinating how it all falls out.
Yeah. You know, let's just, because of time, and I wanted to mention a little bit about the musical that I wrote. Let's touch on a few more paintings. I'm just going to give you some names just so that people will know the portraits that I have on my site. I have Daniel Ellsberg. I have Edward Snowden. I have Dr. Carla Turner, which crosses over into the ufology world. A good friend of mine, Dan Willis, who I really like, is a great guy. I talk to him often. I have Jeffrey Sterling. I have Catherine Austin Fitz, who's amazing. She's great, and the things that she has to say. You know, I have Stephen Bassett of the ufology world. Robert David Steele. You know Robert, don't you?
Of course I do. Of course I do. We collaborated on two memoranda for the President of the United States. One about Sandy Hook, in fact. Published on his blog, but for the President of the United States, and a second on 9/11, prepared for the President of the United States. Those are both masterful pieces that represent some of the most current state of research on both 9/11 and JFK, only to be updated, I think, by current work on Oon's Review. I mentioned Kevin Barrett's article there. I have one on what's wrong with conspiracy theories that has now nearly 950 comments, and there's a lot of effort to defend the official narrative of 9/11. It surprises me. If you want to see the latest stage in debate, that's a great place to visit on Oon's.
You know, Jim, I read your article there. I was very impressed by it. I often visit the Oon's review and report. You know, I often do that, so I'm going to keep doing that. I have the portrait of, which a portrait that I really like is April Gallup, and I know her whole story. And so what I did with each person is when I took an interest in why they were speaking out and what the topic was, of course, at the time, I researched it very well. With all that's going on in present day, which we're not even getting near talking about, I feel like I've been beat over the head with delirium as to where we are at. And I often reflect, Jim, going back, we could even go back to Kennedy assassination. We could go to the Gulf of Tonkin and any number of other things. But I think the failure of the American people to really figure out 9/11 has brought us here. And these are just my feelings on everything, is that they were hard. I mean, how did Building 7 fall? It never made any sense. If Building 7, and I think it's been proven, I think you know this, it's been proven by some architectural studies and everything, that it didn't fall from anything but a controlled demolition. Well, does that mean that there was a separate gang of people taking Building 7 down coincidentally while they were taking the trade centers down? It's all impossible. So either the whole thing is real or the whole thing stinks, and Building 7 is their problem, and it never worked for me. The whole story doesn't work for me, and I don't think it works for a lot of other people. But, you know, April Gallup talked about being in there and picking up her child and walking out of the building, the Pentagon now we're talking about, walking out of the Pentagon and seeing no sign of a plane, no bodies, no.
Yes, of course, yes. Absolutely right. And a colleague of mine, Scott Bennett, drove past the Pentagon the following day, saw no signs of any plane, big blue tarp over where the part of the building had collapsed. But it was obvious to him, and he was a former Army Intel and PSYOPs officer, no plane had crashed there. Yes. I lay all this out, and I'm discussing it on the, you know, very active discussion thread on Oon's Review about this article. In a piece entitled 9/11, Who Was Responsible and Why, a video you can find on BitChute. If you go for Brian Ruhe, R-U-H-E, 9/11, Who Is Responsible and Why, Jim Fetzer, you get quite a layout. Yeah, Doug, this is just terrific stuff. Catherine Austin Fitz, of course, has blown the cover that these are not vaccines, that they have nothing to do with our health. They're injectables, but they do not qualify as medicine and therefore are not entitled to liability under the law.
Yeah,
where Sherry Tenpenny has added that based upon her analysis, these are perfectly designed killing machines. So we are doing our best to let everyone know that the evidence is that the pandemic is not the problem. It's the vaccinations that are going to kill
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. And, you know, Jim, even if you, and I know we're jumping fast forward into 2021 now, but if you just simply, they're called, I mean, I think Moderna calls it an operating system, their vaccine, their mRNA vaccine. And I was told by a very, very high up person, a scientist, a very high up person over a year ago, I was told that you keep your eye on the vaccine and watch the number of autoimmune diseases that are going to start to come up from this, because it will alter your DNA. And there's going to be a whole sort of stuff coming, maybe not right away. Obviously, we are seeing the blood clotting. We're seeing Bell's palsy. We're seeing any number of bad reactions. But what about the reactions that are going to be 3 to 5 years down the road? And, Jim, you know what's something I thought about? Because I haven't really heard it discussed, but I thought about it on my own. That is, and I have not had this jab. I don't want any part of it. And I was never a person that wanted any kind of flu vaccines anyway. But what kind of blood supply is this country going to have for transfusions and for medical reasons and for people injured if everyone has been jabbed with this mRNA thing here? What kind of clean blood are we going to have? I mean, it's going to be valuable. Can you imagine you've had an accident and you're going to the hospital and you need a blood transfusion and the only blood they have is blood that has been altered with these vaccines? This sounds like a real problem to me.
Oh, Doug, you're 100% correct. I've been sent a scan of a notification that the Red Cross will not accept donations from anyone who's been vaccinated because it no longer has the antibodies that are indispensable to human health. So you're making really important point, yes.
So that is a real problematic thing right there, if you think about. And, you know, I often talk to my friends and I say, listen, let's bring this back to the original story. We're all losing our ability to see the genesis of this. We're talking about a alleged pandemic that has a 99.9% survival rate. We're not talking about smallpox. We're not talking about some really, really horrible thing. We're talking about something where the majority of people can survive, number one. I mean, Jim, I had the swine flu back in whenever it was, 2009 or whatever. Yeah, let me tell you something. It knocked me for a loop. And I even walked myself to the local hospital, which is a rare thing for me to do because I rarely have myself involved in any kind of medical issues. And I take good care of myself. And they took like 20 to 30 minutes to even when I was in the emergency room to even come out and like hand me a mask or anything or have anyone. And I told them, I said, I think I have the swine flu. And then they brought me a mask. I finally threw it out, walked out in front of everybody, came home, drank a ton of water and got over the thing. They could have chosen the swine flu also for the pandemic. Any number of other things would fit this, in my opinion. Every homeless person that I know in my town, and I've been here for a long time, is still alive. People out on the street, nobody using masks. I'm playing in an ice hockey group with all guys. We're all on the ice for over a year now. No one wearing masks. People have had it, tested positive, got over it in no time. No one wearing masks. And if it's that deadly and that that bad, I'm surprised I'm still here, and the majority of all my friends and family are still here. So I don't get it. I don't get the urgency. To me, the whole thing is about the vaccine, getting us to have a vaccine.
Yes, no question about it whatsoever. And it's tragic. You know, they're making arguments like they tested the vaccine on children and found it's 100% successful. But children aren't going to get the COVID anyway. This is like saying men who take birth control pills don't get pregnant. So taking birth control pills is 100% success in keeping men from getting pregnant. children given one of these vaccines. It's going to kill them. We have a world-famous virologist, Doug, who's warned that everyone who gets the vax is going to be dead within 2 years. That's not my opinion. That's his. And he's a Nobel Prize winner.
Well, you know, no matter what, to the right or to the left of it, whether it's true or not true or partially true, again, I don't see the precedence for it. I mean, and why? See, why, if we were all collectively on planet Earth wanting to try to solve this problem, we'd be open to ivermectin, we'd be open to hydroxychloroquine, we'd be open to all different alternative methods. Let's all, as a species, wipe this problem out. Let's solve this virus. But we're not. All the censorship and the media is the most alarming thing that we're living through right now, because they don't want these thousands of doctors and thousands of attorneys to step forward and say this is not right.
Doug, we're hitting the break. It's wonderful to have you here. You're so well informed. Everyone, remember the number. Call in 540-352-4452. We'll take your calls when we return from this break.
Like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11,
Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer with my special featured guest today, Doug Auld, A-U-L-D. Check out his website. He's got a fascinating collection of portraits, artwork, fascinating stuff we've been discussing. We have our first caller on the line, Bruce from Texas. Join the conversation, Bruce.
Yes. How's my audio? Okay?
Fine. Very good.
Super. Okay. Yeah. Good stuff so far. Thanks for hanging in there and getting it fixed, guys.
Yeah. Well, we face unusual challenges in this day and age, all things considered. Go ahead, Bruce.
Yes, sir. On 9/11, I'm sure you recall and your guests, the Israeli art students that were in the Twin Towers in the months leading up to 9/11. Yeah. Well, for people who don't know, you know, these people had, they were deviant art performers, and they would perform for the upper crust of Manhattan in the vicinity of, you know, fecal art, putting candles in their behind, what have you. They built a giant statue of the Jeffrey Dahmer murder victim that's upside down on his mattress. So these people were not good. They were sickos, you know, and they're supposed to be from Austria, et cetera, but they seem to be Israelis. Okay. I want you to, I try to email you, Jim, but he either don't reply or it's not getting to you, but I'm going to try to send you this link. I'll put it in the chat. Yeah. Whatever happened to Gelatin, G-E-L-A-T-I-T-I-N. And it follows them along as through their exploits there. And in one of a very short clip in that video shows him horsing around on trolleys in a building, just like you would see on a movie set where they would set up special effects. And so I take it they were inside the World Trade Center building trolleys to do something. Now, if we had no airplanes, and that would be a mode of which to recreate the explosion that you saw moving from one side of the building to the other. And if you notice, they don't intersect the elevators. They go along the side through the offices of the buildings. And by the way, those offices were vacant or not being used. Am I correct on that? Those floors for the airplane?
Well, listen. What's the bottom line here is the planes were intersecting at an angle, the flight 11, 7 floors, flight 175, 8 floors. There's no way in which any real plane could have entered either of those buildings. What the Gelatin Group appears to have been doing, in my estimation, is prepare explosive to blow out those cookie-cutter-like cutouts to make it look as though planes had hit the sides of the building. I believe that was their role. They had box after box of all these fuse-mounting devices. It's very peculiar. So you're right, and I included some discussion, but not as extensive as what you're telling us here about the Gelatin Group. Yes, there were over 200 art students, Israeli Mossad, it appears, who were in the United States under visas as art students and who clearly had a role in relation to 9/11 in New York City. David,
Bruce, also to add to this, of course, one of my other portraits is Christopher Bolin. I was going to mention him earlier. Now, Christopher Bolin did extensive studying on the Israeli situation and the art students and went into that quite a bit. And I actually met him and went to one of his talks and so on. And, of course, he's pretty much still consistently on this topic. But a lot of people may not realize that I live right outside New York City, and I was on the water's edge when 9/11 happened. I didn't see the first plane. I didn't see it. I just saw the hole in the building. But, and this is a true story, so I'm a witness. I looked, we all went down to the water. Someone told me a plane hit the building, and I looked, and I was like, oh, my God, the thing is smoking. And the smoke was blowing from, blowing south. It was blowing away from where I was standing, so you could see everything very clearly, and it was a pristine day. But then I noticed a plane in the distance off to the right, coming down around the back, and I, at best recollection, remember a gray plane. It was not a white. It did not look to me like an airplane that we fly on from United Airlines or American Airlines. And then it went back there behind the building, and I, of course, because the backside of it was not facing me, I never saw it so-called hit the building, but I saw the explosion. So I was there. I saw the second building explode, and I saw both buildings fall.
Well, hang on, Bruce. We're told they collapsed, Doug, but the buildings are actually blowing apart in every direction from the top down. All the floors are remaining stationary until, in the memorable words of Morgan Reynolds, they're blown to kingdom come. The buildings are being converted into millions of cubic yards of very fine dust. And when it's over, there's no stack of debris in their footprint, completely unlike Building 7, which actually did collapse. All the floors come down at the same time, and when it's over, there's a stack of debris of five floors equal to about 12% of the original 47 floors, which means we should have expected about 13 and a half floors of debris for each of the Twin Towers, but that it's because they were destroyed in a completely different way. And yes, while it was an image of a plane, it appears to have been a projection based upon my work, and this is a subject of considerable debate on the OONS, my article about what's wrong with conspiracy theories. It appears to have been done by a holographic projection by another plane that was flying 1,200 feet to the side and projecting the image, where the other plane, because it was a real plane, was caught on radar and flies past the building while projecting the image of the plane into the building at the same time the explosion is set to take place. Bruce, go ahead. Bruce, then we'll get back to Dave.
Interesting. An eyewitness that we have on the air here. I wasn't an eyewitness in person. I watched the footage. I was an EMT paramedic. I just got off duty that morning. And so the phone rang and woke me up and told me to turn on the TV. And so I watched the events that they were televised, whether everything we saw was real or not. But later on, when the FOIA videos were released, I saw one of the ambulances from my own station crushed under the rubble. And so I have an extreme interest in this. Plus, and you talk about, Jim, the buildings exploding. Well, yeah, there were chunks of firefighters found blocks away. A collapse would not have done that. It was
right. Doug, go ahead and elaborate. I know. I mean, this is an extremely controversial aspect of all of this. My research supports the conclusion all four of the crash sites were fabricated or fake. Two of the planes, 11 and 77, weren't even in the air that day. And pilots for 9/11 Truth actually tracked Flight 93 and found it was over Champaign-Urbana after it had officially crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and that Flight 175 was over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania after it officially hit the South Tower. In fact, the aircraft, the actual physical planes used for those two flights, weren't even deregistered by the FAA until 28 September 2005. Raising questions such as, how can planes that weren't even in the air have crashed on 9/11, and how can planes that crashed on 9/11 have still been in the air 4 years later? But these are among the most controversial issues related to 9/11 research.
Well,
can I ask you just a question?
Yeah, but I want him to have a chance to answer. He'll go squeeze it in, Bruce, and then we'll turn it over to Doug. Go ahead.
Sure, yeah, because I had to hang up. Did the airplane or whatever you saw flying that day, you say it didn't look like a commercial airplane? Could it have been maybe a military aircraft or a drone of some type?
Bruce, are you addressing me?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Oh, Bruce, what I thought I saw, so know that I'm going down there and not knowing anything about anything. What I thought I saw was a military plane, like a gray plane. Like I thought, and I said, I remember saying this to a stranger that was standing next to me. I said, oh, look, it looks like a surveillance plane or something is coming around the back to take a look at what happened. I did not see in my mind, and I'm near Newark Airport, and, you know, I see flights from Newark Airport, from LaGuardia, from Kennedy, from, you know, these airports around here. I did not see what I believed to be a passenger jet. It looked like a unmarked military plane from what I saw. And what's really remarkable, to me, the most remarkable thing is that footage where they show the plane in slow motion. It's really fascinating how you can see the plane, actually that plane coming around the back, how it can actually enter the entire trade center, none of the wings falling off, nothing, and freeze. You could freeze frame it just at the right time where the entire plane is in the building prior to an explosion. It's one of the most remarkable feats of physics I've ever seen.
Good, very good, very good. Bruce,
the video was made by a diamond merchant from Battery Park.
You know,
there are 52 different videos, but you're talking about the Hezer Kani, the primary. Yeah. Excellent, Bruce. Yeah. Thank you very much for the call. Thank we have another Bruce. Caller. We have another caller standing by, Doug. We have Scaredy Cat. Scaredy, join the conversation.
Okay.
Hi, Jim and Doug and Mitch. And I guess goodbye, Bruce from Texas. Jim is too modest to brag about himself. But I want to quote the ending of Mr. Ron Avery's article. I didn't have time to write the whole thing down, but a little bit. It says, this case, which is Jim's case with Posner, I guess, this case deserves the attention of every American, and it should be invested in by every American and every company in America. And then something about going on, we can't let injustice stand. And this investment is what I wanted to point out. As an example, I took my mom earlier this week on Monday, 4 days ago, to see Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. And because I didn't have a computer to print out the paperwork ahead of time and fill in, like, patient history, the office wouldn't take us. So we had driven 6 hours from near Washington, D.C. to Ohio, where Dr. Sherry Tenpenny is. And we had waited for that appointment for about 3 or 4 months, I think back in January or February. We took the earliest available appointment, and that was on Monday, which was May the 24th. And so I said, well, okay, give us the next earliest one, and then we'll come again. And the next earliest one was in December. So we took it, so that's 7 months from now. So what I had intended is just to get every member of my family. It is expensive. I think each time it's $450. But one at a time, since my mom is the eldest, obviously, of our family living, then one by one, my daughter, you know, et cetera, for just overall health. And at the different stages of life, you know, newlyweds are going to have babies, my age, middle age, my mom's age, memory, and so on. Just look over how we can live a better life. And then obviously also to get advice on what medical doctors, how harmful they can be, advice on what tablets we should be diminishing and weaning off of, and so on. So this is a point about entrepreneurship, because Dr. Sherry Tenpenny's fame, she is, well said, she's doing she's a good service to the public, but we need this to happen with, I immediately thought of Jim. We should all be buying his book. And I know Jim's favorite book for newbies, but also I was a little distressed to hear that there are 1 million downloads on the Sandy Hook book, but I didn't see it listed as a paper book. Is it totally banned? Because we should all be buying his book, and maybe Jim gets $5-$10 royalty, but all of America should buy a copy, and I recommend buy two copies to give to somebody as a gift to make them aware of all these crookedness occurring. So, Jim, is there the Sandy book available for purchase and also for in his website? You gave a website, but is there a contact form where we can type in and actually talk to you? Go ahead.
The book is not available for sale at present. And Scary, if that should change, you know, I have had the suggestion of doing a redacted version of the book that I think is a brilliant idea. So I'm going to work on that. Meanwhile, if anyone did want to donate, if they go to falseflagconspiracy2020.com, falseflagconspiracy2020.com, in the upper right-hand corner, you can gain access to the archives for the conference I organized on the 5th and the 6th of December. You can download all of the presentations for free, but you also have the chance to make a donation to my legal defense fund. I mean, it's right there. It's about as simple as it could be. Different amounts. I didn't originally envision this, but it was done along the way by those who were assisting me. And if anyone wanted to contribute to my legal defense fund, that would be a sensational way to do it. It's also possible to make a direct electronic transfer using Zelle, Z-E-L-L-E. If you just use a Zelle transfer, it goes directly into my legal defense fund. Just use my email address on Zelle, jfetzer@d.umn.edu. Those all work. And of course, alternatively, I mean, to my home, you could send, if you wanted, a money order check to James Fetzer Legal Defense Fund, 800 Violet Lane, Oregon, Wisconsin, WI 53575. Doug.
Yes, sir. All right, Jim, just remember, I'll have to be out of here immediately at 2 o'clock. So we have a
yes, yes. Well, we won't go over, Doug. We got about five to 6 minutes, so you're good. Okay. You're going to be okay.
Okay. So, just so that everybody else knows, on my site, DougAll.com, I also cover a series of paintings I did that got a nice New York Times article at the time in 2005. I did a series of paintings called State of Grace, and it was my interest in this very hard, sad subject of burn survivors, who I see as sort of modern-day lepers in our society, since we have no tolerance for anybody who doesn't fit into a nice Barbie and Ken kind of format. And these are marvelous people. I did a study and a cooperative art venture with St. Barnabas Burn Center here in my area. And Kathy Conlon had the head woman of the burn unit had me come in and interview 10 or 12 different burn survivors who were volunteers. And I made over the next 3 to 5 years, I made a series of large scale burn survivor portraits that are still, in my mind, still yet to come into its own. These people are quite amazing, and one of them, Louise, her and her sister were in the house fire in Haiti, and sadly, 5 family members in that fire died that day that they were in that fire. The two of them survived with some of the most horrific scars and burns. Louise lost an arm and a leg. Her sister lost fingers, and they're both physically altered. And I wanted to take this subject on to, again, talk about the human fragility, how we are all paper thin, how it could happen to anybody at any moment of time. And you could go out one morning, you know, kicking your heels, and by the afternoon you're in a burn unit, and it's, and which does happen. And I wanted my skills and my work to say something in honor of them. So that series of work called State of Grace is also on my website.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's wonderful, Doug. Wonderful. Scaredy, did you have further questions or comment?
Yes, definitely. I have like 99. But
go for it.
One or two. Mr. Ault, I think, Doug?
Ault, yes.
Yeah.
Ault. Yes, I just wanted to let you know, in my little township, actually about 8 miles from our house, near where we sent our little kids to the, you know, Montessori school, there were two very nice, cute little side-by-side shops. I shouldn't say cute. I'm just I'm a girl, I guess I say that. With the Ault brothers, A-U-L-D. One was a lawyer, and the other one was a hardware lumber owner. And it was so good, but then it was so sad. There's a tragedy. Now it's been totally disappeared. And just because of the street needlessly widened, and just, it was so nice, a small lane going up to the little school with all these mom and pop shop, or family, I should say, the old family businesses, but they've been flattened, and that's what we have to get back to. And so again, I'm going to do my little plug for entrepreneurship. So I was so glad that you mentioned your Catholic family and yourself. And I really want a Christian magazine. The only one I know, the electronic one, is realjewnews.com, which is run by Brother Nathaniel, the Orthodox, Russian Orthodox priest. And the other one by the Catholic author, with the magazine, which is paper magazine, thankfully, called Culture Wars, by Dr. E. Michael Jones is the publisher. And really the only other magazine I know that I would want to publish on is Jim's, his www.jamesfetzer.org. F for fantastic, E for excellent, T for terrific, Z for zenith, E for excellent again, R for rambunctious.
How very sweet, Scaredy. How very sweet. And I love it.
And then, so I think I was thinking the only either yourself, Doug, or maybe our great Scorpio, Dolphin Dave Scorpio, because I know he's also Christian. He says that, and he's proud of it and pleased with his religion. Maybe we could get you guys to start a Christian magazine where we could publish. And the reason why I'm saying is that everything is taken over by that small religion, the Jew culture. And my problem is that, for example, here is something from Merrick Garland, who is our attorney general, but I think that the AG more stands for anti-Goy, which is everybody other than being a Jew, because he says this, I just read this today, though many years have passed, the terror perpetrated by people like Timothy McVeigh is still with us. That's nonsense. That's me, Scaredy Cat, saying nonsense. Just last month, the FBI warned of the ongoing and heightened threat posed by domestic violent extremists. And I am a Muslim, Doug, and our teaching, our religious advice is that we must help Christians. And I find myself in a Christian country which is being destroyed. And then that's me again, Scaredy Cat. And again, Merrick Garland goes on to say the Department of Justice is pouring its resources into stopping domestic violent terrorist extremists before they can attack. And then it goes on to, he goes on to say that we have to pour our resources into prosecuting. So that means he's going to, as our anti-Goy attorney general, he's going to prosecute every white Christian man. Because what they've done is they've taken the terrorist label off of my forehead and slapped it on yours. Yeah. So I'm very glad you discussed your Catholic Christian upbringing. Go ahead,
Jerry. Ernie, that was wonderful. Doug, I want you to have the last word here. Sensational having you on. Thanks for persevering. Final thoughts?
Yes, thank you very much for having me on. Hopefully we can get the visuals going on another day. And we can also visit Jim, I wrote a musical, and I wanted to say a little bit of something about it. I know we only have a minute left, but I have a musical that I wrote that has to do with the alien, the ET UFO topic that I've been studying for many years. And my musical is called Hypnota.
Doug, I'm gonna have you back, my friend. We'll do it right, and we'll get our video done this weekend. Thanks, my friend. Thanks everyone for listening. Thanks to Bruce and Scary for calling.
Thanks everybody else. Okay, thank you very much. Have a good one. Bye bye.
Have a great Memorial Day weekend. Back on Monday.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect, Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was...